Amanda's like 5 years sober, and I'm like almost 10, and I'm like, it's cool, dude. I'm still sober. You know, you can do it. So anyways, shout out, girl. But we've really been making an effort lately to not look at our phones during the whole meeting. So just so you all know, putting that out there. I got sober May 12th, 2004. I started coming to YPG. I remember being like really weirded out because at that time it was like 6 or 7, maybe 8 people. And they just all seemed like people that would not mix. And I remember being like, people my age, like, don't drink. Why? Like, are they here because their parents forced them to come here? But some of them look so rough. I'm like, they probably haven't talked to their parents in, like, 10 years and been living on the streets or something. I'm like, I know their parents didn't force them to come here, you know. And I was confused because they all seemed, like, happy to be there. And I was like, this is, like, not computing at all. Like, what? These guys, first of all, either are not alcoholics, like I supposedly am, and everybody keeps telling me I am, but they don't know. I just drink because of my mom. She's, like, insane. So, like, who wouldn't drink with a mom like mine? She was, like, totally down my throat all the time. Or that they were actually drinking or, like, on pills or drugs or something. I mean, that it just never occurred to me that people, especially people my age, would not drink and then would be happy about not drinking. Even today, it sounds weird. At my job, we do, I'm a nurse, so we do like medical histories. And sometimes I ask patients about their alcohol use. And they, almost 99 out of 100, everybody's like, maybe one drink a year, maybe on New Year's. You know, we get that a lot. Maybe, you know, one beer a week, you know, if I go out with the guys. I'm like, oh, you guys can drink normally. Do it up, like, every night. I mean, why wouldn't you, you know? If I was a normal drinker, I would drink every day, like, to the head every day. But anyway, so this lady the other day I was reading through, she turned out to be a no-show, but she's really a nice lady. And it said on her chart, just to drink on Mother's Day. That hit me like a ton of bricks. I was like, yeah, just a drink on Mother's Day, right? Like, I'm a mom. It's like the whole thing in my world because she's 3. So everything I do is centered around her. Everything that I think, that's like my whole world, you know. Like, she is number one priority, number one thing on my mind all the time. And, a drink on Mother's Day. Like, all of a sudden I was like, that doesn't count because, you know, it does count. But if I deserve a drink, it is on Mother's Day, okay? That's just to show you after 9 years of being sober, you know, you're still crazy. Like, I'm still like, wow, that's a great idea. Like, what a great day to deserve a drink. And nobody would blame you because you have a toddler, you know, and you're a mom, you know, and you're crazy to begin with. It would just be like, meh. You know, like, I always have these dreams. I don't really have drinking dreams anymore, but I have dreams like where we all drink, but you just got to kind of keep it, you know, a secret and, like, don't go crazy, you know, like, you know, like, maybe have one or two. You can even get, like, really wasted, but then just don't go out again after that. Like, go home, you know, and, like, try to go to bed like a normal person. Don't call anybody, you know, don't text anybody. And, and then, like, that's the whole thing about AA is, like, we just sometimes drink. I have that dream all the time, and I think it's because I cannot believe I've been sober this whole time. Like, actually sober, like, no drinking or drugs or anything. It still, to this day, like, blows my mind. I mean, that's, like, I mean, I'm not, maybe I am trying to brag, but freaking 9 years, y'all, come on. come on. Even I can't believe it. I feel like I'm living somebody else's life. It's really weird. Anyway, so enough about that. What it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I grew up in, like, a really awesome household, although I'm starting to, like, look at some Al-Anon stuff with my sponsor, just, you know, to help me out with some relationship and communication and, like, really fundamental basic living skills that I seem to not have anymore, or maybe I never had them. That's probably closer to it. And now I'm like, maybe my childhood was fucked up. You know, like, I don't know. She's kind of – I don't really know what's going to happen with going, you know, reading that kind of – the Al-Anon stuff. I won't say the Al-Anon word too much, but it's really kind of making me think twice about, you know, what was going on. But bottom line, that's, you know, not why I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic because my grandfather was and my aunt was, and then on my dad's side, like, everybody was into drugs, you know, which I was into that too. It was cool. So, yeah, as far as I knew, it was great. I went to an Episcopalian school. It's like Catholic. I'll not say anything bad about Catholic, but I can say something about Episcopalian. It's really dry and it's boring. You do get wine on Wednesdays. Okay. Every Wednesday we had communion, and every single day we went to church in the morning. And then Sunday we went to church. So I literally went to church 6 days a week. And after doing that for 10 years, I came away with the idea that I had known all along that God wasn't really real. And that this was just a product of some couple fanatics who were like, oh, let's, you know, everybody go to church and make the kids, you know, think they should behave because, like, Jesus is going to kill them or something. And, you know, and it was like, you know, okay, I got it. You know, I'm scared or whatever. And really what I came out of school with was like a major fear of like authority, not like God or whatever. I didn't even think that was real. I thought maybe like God was like this really far away thing that, you know, we were way too sinful to ever even, we shouldn't even think about it, you know, because we're like not that holy, you know, like don't even go there. You can like sing a hymnal song or whatever and that's it. Like, you know, don't think, you know, you're getting in because you're not. You're a person and you're just fucked from the beginning basically because you're born a human, you know, and humans are sinful. The second you're born, you're going to hell. I mean, I'm sorry. So it was like, that's really what I thought. I was like, there's no way against this, you know, whereas it's an uphill battle. I mean, we're effed from the beginning. So that didn't really help. So if any of you are like, oh, my kid's going to go to a good school or they go to church a lot, like, you might want to rethink that, you know. Just save the money, you know. Take them to Sunday school or something. I don't know, something where church is fun, because mine was not fun at all. I mean, it was not tailored to first graders, you know, through eighth graders at all. It was really weird. I mean, they speak in Latin and stuff. And but yeah, the wine on Wednesday was pretty awesome. But it was weird, though. I remember being allergic to wine because I'd be like, Mom, every time I get communion, I get this weird, like, burning sensation here. I would, like, come to love that sensation later. Although I never drank wine because I was like, I don't know anything about wine. Like, natural ice, that's fine. Like, why would I drink wine? That's weird. And probably expensive. I mean, maybe it wasn't. I don't know. But I would not know. And so when I went to the pediatrician, you know, the next time, he was like, oh, she's allergic to the sulfates and the wine, so she can't have communion anymore. And I remember thinking it was, like, really cool because I would go up there to get my communion, and it was like I was rebelling. You just do this, and they won't give you any wine. So when he would walk by, I would take my wafer, you know, the body. I'd eat the body part, but not the blood. Anyway, I knew I was going to do this. It's like, oh, talk about AA. God. Okay. So I didn't start drinking. Okay, so like my dad died, and I thought that was, you know, like really traumatic or whatever, and it was because it was really sudden. And before that, I had been living with him. My parents got divorced, and my dad like lied a bunch and got custody of me and my brother, even though we should have gotten to my mom. Like, having a daughter now, I know that the children should always go with their mom unless the mom is like, you know, like out of control, like drinking or using or something. So he died really suddenly. He just like kind of woke up one morning and like fell over, and that was it. Like, we didn't know there was anything wrong with him. He was 41. I was 13. I had just turned 13. And I started like cutting myself because, and honestly, I thought I was the only one that did that until I saw this lady on Oprah talking about it. And I was like, shh. I was like, you cannot tell anybody that. Not something that you would talk about. And then I'm like, oh my God, other people know about this. I'm like, there's got to be a better way. Like, this, thank God there was drugs and alcohol so I could stop doing that. But I did it a lot, and like, it felt good. You know, it was like kind of a release. Like, I don't know if any of you guys ever did it. I don't even know where I came up with the idea, but it was cool. And it was weird, you know, and like, it made me feel like I had something going on because I got really depressed. Like, looking back, I know I was like really clinically depressed for 3 years. And my mom would be like, here, take this Paxil. And I would like take it some days. You know, like, I didn't realize you have to take it every day, you know, around the same time for it to work. So I'd be like, this stuff doesn't work, you know. And I took it for like nine, she was probably paying it for like 9 years, and I like was barely taking it. I don't know. Depressed. And then I started hanging out with this older guy, and he was not a bad guy. He never tried to have sex with me, which is like miraculous looking back, because I was wasted all the time. Like, and you know, I was like a sitting duck. And only one of his friends tried, which is also amazing. And I liked that guy. I need to not go there. Never mind. But typical alcoholic, you know, sloppy B word. As soon as he was like, okay, I like you too. I was like, you're barking up the wrong tree, buddy. You know, like acting like, you know, I was too good for him or something. So that's weird. But anyways, you know, I just had that inferiority complex and stuff going on, and the superiority thingy going on, whatever it is, I forget. Something I still have today, which I can't remember what it's called. So he was like, you know, they drank beer and stuff, and they smoked pot and stuff on his roof. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. I didn't really know what alcohol did, but I knew that I wanted some. Oh, yeah. The first time I drank was on a cruise, and they were giving out champagne to everybody on New Year's Eve. And they had a ship, like, passing through each time zone, so that once you pass through another time zone, then it's 12 o'clock again. And you do it, like, four times. So it's like, wow, that's amazing. So they do it like four times. It's Happy New Year again. It was super nice. My friend's parents took me on it because they felt bad for me because my dad passed away. And it was an awesome time. It really was. But I remember like the first time I drank, I was like, wow, I really don't care about like being really sad anymore. Because my dad had just passed away like, I don't know, 6 months before the cruise. And I was like, wow, you know, I feel really brave. And like, I feel like I don't really care that my dad died. And you know what? I'm going to use it to my advantage and like start sleeping around, you know, and like being like a girl from the other side of the tracks, you know, and like that's what I thought I would do, you know. And I did. I guess somebody doesn't like my talk. I understand. I don't like it either. Oh, there he goes. gosh, where was I? Sleeping around. Other side of the tracks. Okay, yeah. Yeah, so I did. And, you know, I really felt like, okay, this is how people get along in life. Like, the first time I felt drunk, I was like, oh. I'm like, why didn't anybody tell me this? All this time I've been, like, suffering, and there's this thing that you can just drink and not feel suffering anymore. I'm like, duh. Like I was, like, so relieved. I was like, oh, thank you, Jesus. There is something, you know. Like, there's a way to live, you know, a way to cope. And that's what it was, a coping skill, because I felt a lot of sadness and, like, a lot of fear, and I had no coping skills, and that kind of helped me, I don't know, get through that time period. I might have been blacked out, but I was getting through it. You know, time was passing. the guy that I was hanging out with, he, you know, drank beer and stuff. It was no big deal. Then we got into, like, mixed drinks and stuff, and that was still no big deal. But I remember I never understood, or I guess nobody ever showed me, like, you're not supposed to puke every time you drink. So I just thought that was like par for the course. Like you're not really drinking unless you're puking at the end of the night. Like I don't know why I thought that. So yeah, I just had no stopping. Like, and I still don't understand how people stop, because even if you're not a normal drinker, right? I mean, you are a normal drinker and you have a few beers, you're like impaired a little bit, right? So then how are you using that impaired brain to be like, I should slow down? You're not impaired. I mean, if you're making that decision, you're still two together, and maybe you need to have another one. I don't know. Like, I could never stop myself. I'd be like, well, I've had three drinks. I'm totally impaired. So, of course, my decision-making is going to be impaired. So, of course, I'm going to have another drink and another one and another one and another one. I was just born like that. I had no stopping on drinking. There was, unless, you know, it was taken away from me, or I got arrested, or I got kidnapped by my mom from wherever I was partying, which is super embarrassing. So I really just never, I'd never from the get-go, never drank normal. I never wanted to drink normal. I didn't know what drinking normal was. These were guys from Jesuit, and like they were older and they were about to graduate, and they were like hardcore drinkers looking back. I remember the one guy picked me up to go see a movie or something, the nice one, and he had beer literally in his center console, and he's like, well, see, you can drink it. I'm like, oh, my God, you can drink beer in the morning. There's nothing stopping you. Like, why wouldn't you want to be drunk all the time? You know, it feels so awesome. It's like, why would you want that to end? And I was like, wow, it just never occurred to me. And then I was like, so drinking in the morning was never like, oh, I'm so hungover. Well, it later was that. you know, I need a hair of the dog that bit me or whatever, you know, because I did that a lot later. Really, it was just like, oh, we're just going to get drunk early today, maybe take a nap, wake up, have a barbecue, and get drunk again, right? I'm sure you guys did that. Yeah. It was awesome. And so I probably got to get moving here. Let's see. Okay. So, yeah, I got arrested a couple times, domestic violence or whatever. And the police were like, you know, we're really sick of coming here to this house that we were living at, which is a total another story. The poor guy was, like, dying, and he had one lung and a colostomy bag, and it's basically like a bag that you poop into, and it's, like, on your side. And everything that comes out your rear end comes into the pouch. And he had all kinds of, like, painkillers and stuff, but what he really wanted was weed. So I was like, we got that, you know, like, we knew all, like, the weed dealers and stuff. And so, and my boyfriend was really, I don't want to say cool because, well, yeah, I thought he was cool, you know, but he was connected. And like, today we wouldn't think that was cool, you know, we'd be like, psh, what a douche, you know, but he like knew everybody and he was good at like schmoozing people and stuff. So so we ended up moving in, and we moved in two of our other friends, and literally one of them lived underneath the dining room table. We got a bedroom, the other guy claimed a bedroom, and the other one, his name was Bean, and he was older than all of us. Like, he could actually buy alcohol, but he never had an ID because he was never like legal or legit, you know. So he'd go up to buy alcohol and they wouldn't sell it to him, but they'd sell him to like my boyfriend who was like 15, you know. So, but poor Bean. But yeah, he would like bring girls over, and he'd be like, yeah, I know this is just where I'm staying for a little while. And he put, like, a blanket over the table, like, as a fort, like, blocking it. And if we were, like, out there watching TV, he'd be like, go in your rooms, y'all. He needs some privacy. I wonder whatever happened to him. I hope I never see him again. So embarrassing stuff, you know. Why should I be embarrassed? That's weird. I've got it all backwards. Anyways, so we just became like, I mean, we could have been homeless people for all I know. I mean, all I did was drink. We did not pay rent. We ended up like stealing from this guy big time. And he ended up dying a couple months after we moved out. And by moved out, I mean his family came down and literally like kicked us all out. Like, what are you doing? You can't just take advantage of this guy. But, you know, we did. And that was kind of sad. So, anyways, after that, oh, yeah, the arrest. I got kind of a DUI, long story, which I was totally profiled because I was at a red light when I got pulled over for speeding. Excuse me. Anybody else see a problem with that? It was crazy. I was like, sir, you're kidding, right? They made me do like a field sobriety test. I was on the Kennedy. I was like, oh my God, please nobody see me right now. But he ended up letting my friend drive my car home, and he didn't take me to jail or anything. Oh, and I got arrested in high school for smoking weed in the parking lot. You know, when you smoke pot, you just think that everybody smokes pot. You know, you like literally, you're like, that's cool. Well, that's what I was like. I was like, oh, everybody smokes pot. Well, apparently if you like turn somebody in school, you get like $80. So this guy who I know smokes pot and drinks and is defunctive to this day, because I see him on Facebook, and he's like nothing, okay? He turned me in. Well, he was like the cool guy back in school, you know? He, like, turned me in, and I remember they, like, carted me on a golf cart, you know, like, and they put handcuffs on me. Like, they made a big spectacle, and I was like, that's right, you guys, I'm about it, you know, like, I don't just talk about it, you know, up my street cred, like some people say. And people were probably just like, God, what an idiot. When is she going to get it together? Like, I used to wear the same clothes every day. I'm sure it smelled like weed. I just didn't have the effort to get dressed, you know, like to wear something different or wash my hair, you know, like it's not really important. You're just going to school anyways, you know, it's like whatever. Anyway, I didn't start out like that. I was a really nice girl and like did my hair and stuff. Like I was like, you know, like maybe like I am today. But once I started doing drugs and alcohol, I didn't care anymore about anything else but getting wasted, you know. And the officer that arrested me recently got arrested. So I'm like, hey, officer. I just want to go see her, Officer Hevel. She was like, if it's over 50, I won't go into the details or something, but she was really, it was really stupid. She was really trying to make it more than it was. And anyways, I felt really bad when my mom found out, you know, and I was like, oh, it's my first time, you know, and she's like, yeah, right. And anyways, I got to get moving here. I ended up going to treatment. Oh, and here's why, other than the alcoholism. I started doing drugs, shooting up heroin, and the Oxycontins and stuff weren't really popular. They weren't really out yet. I think they were out, but nobody was really using them. And I remember the first time I did it, I remember somebody offered it to me when I was sober one time, and I was like, no. I'm like, people die off that stuff. And, like, my boyfriend wanted to try it. I was like, are you crazy? And when I found out he smoked crack, I started crying. I was like, how could you think so little of yourself? And literally an hour later, I'm like, smoking the crack with him. I'm like, it's not so bad, you know. But it is bad. I mean, it's not even, doesn't even barely get you high. It just makes you, like, want to clean and then hate yourself and then want more. Don't waste your relapse. That was wrong. Bad, wrong. Anyways, yeah, and so then one time I was drinking, and I was drinking beer out of a coffee mug, you know, because what else, you know, it's the morning, you drink out of a coffee mug. And this guy, we went downstairs, and this guy's got, like, little kids running around and stuff, and they're, like, shooting it up in their house. Apparently it was just, like, whatever around the kids and stuff. And I remember picking up the baby and holding her, and the dad came up to me, and he's like, oh, I'll shoot her up. And well, I mean, I said okay. I was cool with it. But here's my stupid-ass judgment. I'm holding a baby, and he's doing that. And I'm like, and I'm drunk, you know. And I'm like, oh, I never heard you're not supposed to mix alcohol and heroin. I never even heard that till I got here. So, like, whoa, you guys are really looking at, like, a person, a survivor here, okay? And then I'm like, oh, how long does this stuff start to take to kick in? And that's, like, nothing. Like, as soon as I'm done saying the words, I'm like, oh. It's like I'm putting the baby down, and I'm, like, trying to walk up the stairs. And from that on, I was like, I'm going to try to do this every time I can, you know, with alcohol, of course, because I'm too scared to do it without alcohol, and which was really stupid because, like, about your judgment being impaired, like, I really didn't know what I was doing, you know? Like, if it wasn't for guys around me, like, doing the logistics of it for me, like, I could have died. I'm sure I could have died anyways with the guys doing the logistics. I mean, they weren't, you know, winners either, so. So I was doing that, and then eventually I cut myself really bad on purpose because my boyfriend said he didn't love me anymore, and I just dared him to say it again. And as I'm holding a knife in my hand, I am, like, psycho, okay? And he said it again, and I just, like, ripped, like, I mean, I could have, like, ripped my whole hand off with this knife. The EMTs were like, why would you do this? And I'm like, you wouldn't understand, you know? Because anyway, so they called the police or the EMTs or whatever. They came and, like, Baker-acted me in the hospital. I had, like, an entourage behind my ambulance. There was police cars. I was like, woo-hoo. People are probably wondering who's in that ambulance, and it's me. Anyway, I somehow talked my way out of the Baker Act, which is, like, illegal, I know, but my mom works at a psych unit, and that's where they wanted to transfer me. Well, they can't do that. So then they're like, oh, well, you have to stay here for a couple days until we can transfer you somewhere else. And I'm like, you know what? I have a psychiatrist appointment tomorrow, so I'm good. And she's like, are you promise you're going to go? And I was like, yeah. And she's like, all right, you can go. So my boyfriend came and picked me up. And I remember being like, okay, for real this time, I need to not do drugs. And I really meant it. I was like, just for one day, no pills, no alcohol, whatever. And somewhere in this day or maybe the next day, I didn't make it through that day not doing drugs or alcohol. My felon boyfriend and my, what's it called when they, fugitive roommate sat me down and told me that my behavior was scaring them. And I was like, are we on camera? I'm like, you guys drink and party way more than I do, which probably wasn't true, but, like, with me, you know, and, like, you guys think it's cool when I do it, so what's the deal? Like, it was crazy. I just couldn't even believe it. And they were like, you need to leave, you know, and I was like, you guys are going to live here by yourselves without, and I was looking good back then. I mean, I was a mess, but I was like, seriously, you're going to kick me out? Okay, fine. So I ended up taking, like, some pills that night and drinking. And I was like, man, I really messed up, you know. So I called because I really didn't want to do drugs that night. I really tried. And I ended up, Nick, my boyfriend, called my brother and was like, come get your sister. And I was like, yeah, I need to go, you know. But, of course, I was, like, drugged up. And so my brother came and got me, and all I know was that I woke up the next morning at his place on the couch, and his wife at the time was holding up a bottle of red Robitussin, and it was like half empty. It might have been fully empty. I don't even remember. And she's like, "What happened to this?" And I'm like, "I didn't know. I had no idea." And I go in the bathroom, and it looks like somebody took, you know, like when you open a champagne bottle and you're like this, it's like, "Dee!" That's what it looks like with the red Robitussin, literally dripping down the walls. And it was like stuck because it had been there since the night before, like sap going down a tree on the walls. And I was like, I know what happened. I mean, I didn't say this, but, you know, I probably drank it, you know, because, you know, there's alcohol in it. And I was a big, like, oh, I can't sleep without booze, you know, so I really need to, like, chug something over there because they didn't have alcohol in the house. So that was, you know, what I did. And so my brother called my mom, and he's like, "She needs to go to treatment." She's, like, out of her mind. And all this time I'm, like, my whole arm is wrapped up, and I've got these stitches, and I'm just a mess. And so I went to treatment. It was nice. They took us to AA. I remember seeing Bill Weber at meetings and this girl, Nicole, and they were like, "Oh, yeah, you should come to a meeting, and here's my number, and call me when you get out." And I was like, "That's weird." I was like, "Okay." But Nicole seemed really cool. Like, she dressed really cute, and she seemed really happy and stuff. And I was like, you know, that's something I didn't expect. And my roommate, well, I won't tell you. I'm based on time, but it's just kind of a tangent, juicy story about my roommate murdering her daughter and being my roommate. And anyways... But she was so nice. I mean, you would never think that, you know. She was like, "I'm going crazy." Turned to find out she's going crazy because she killed her daughter, and she knows it. You know, she did it with drugs by accident. She accidentally overdosed her 14-year-old daughter. Yeah. And then she got, like, this weird complex with me in the treatment center, like I was her daughter. And I was like, "There's nothing wrong with that. She misses her daughter." And now I'm like, I escaped with my life. So I went to treatment. It was really nice, blah, blah, blah. I met a lot of people, whatever. And then I got out, and I called the girl, and she was like, "Okay, I'll have somebody pick you up." And so somebody picked me up, and they brought me to this meeting. And it was a young people's meeting at somebody's house. And I remember being like – I remember feeling like I don't know, like this new, like, spectacle, you know, like really – I was dressed really cute. Like, I had on, like, high heels that were strappy. I never wear high heels anymore. Like, this is, like, dressing up. And I had on, like, a really short skirt and I think, like, a white, I don't know, like, a white collared shirt. So I had, like, that, you know, 2000 look going on. Because that's probably when it was, 2000 or 2001, September, actually. And I was like, "Some of you know me and some of you may not know me, but I'm going to be coming to your meetings from now on." And I remember I knew somebody there. Like, I really felt like they were lucky that I was going to be in their group now because they all looked so pathetic at the time. I was like, "This is just sad." And they were probably just like, "Oh, my God, this girl." There was this guy there that I knew from drinking. And I'm like, "Oh, Ryan." I'm like, "We know each other from, you know, I did a few Gasparillas at his house and stuff." And his mom was cool with, like, everybody drinking in the house. So, you know, I did that a couple times. But that was pretty much all we knew of each other. And we went on the patio, and we're smoking a cigarette. We're like, "What's your drug of choice?" And, like, all that stupid stuff that we talk about. And I was like, "You know, since we know each other, I'm going to, like, kind of hang with you, all right? Is that cool?" And he was like, "Nah." He's like, "Why don't you try to hang out with some of the girls?" And I was like, what? Like, I felt so rejected, you know? I didn't realize at the time. It was 10 minutes. Oh, my God. Okay, AA. So anyways, I went in and out for a long time, and that was the hardest time. It was horrible. Like, I have never felt that, like, self-pity and despair, and literally, like, I wanted to kill myself. And one day, I remember being, like, it was in and out of AA. I had, you know, I knew everybody that was in my group, and they were just like, "Oh, here she comes, another white chip, you know. She's pregnant again, and no, it's just beer belly, you know. Don't be alarmed. I'm still available." And, So I come, I really didn't want to drink this day, I remember. And I was like, this was like the first day. I was like, I really want to see if I can do it, you know, like not drink and use for today. And I did, up until like 6 o'clock when the booze from the night before started wearing off and I'm getting like really agitated, you know, and like, I'm really getting, my mom's getting on my nerves. So I'm like living in her apartment and she's like, I'm like 22, like, or no, I must've been 20 cause I got sober at 21. You know, like I should have been long gone from her apartment. I didn't work, you know, and I'm like, you're really pissing me off, mom. Stop asking me to do the dishes. God. You know, and like, I just need to get out, mom. I just need to go take a walk, you know, and I'm like, somebody pick me up. And so somebody picked me up. I went up, you know, drank, smoked, did everything wrong that night, kind of blacked out because I remember driving a minivan down a road and I've never driven a van before. And not only was I drunk, but I was underage, you know, I was like young. And the guy was like, oh, it's cool. You're probably better driver than me right now because he was really drunk, too. So anyways, that happened. And then that night, I had like this crazy spiritual experience. I got home at like, I don't know, like 4 in the morning. And I was like, oh, I know I'm getting kicked out again tomorrow. Like, I'm getting kicked out again tomorrow. I was like, oh, well, whatever. I'll go, you know, I'm near Kennedy. Like, there's some people I know over there, you know, I can get around from here. And all of a sudden, like, I just felt like, you know, I started thinking about AA and stuff. And I was like, oh, I couldn't get drunk enough. Like, when I was over there. And then especially when I was laying in my bed trying to go to bed, I was like, I was thinking very clearly, and I was like, you know, those people in AA said that if I didn't change, that I was going to drink again, and here I am, I'm drunk again, and this time I really didn't want to be, and that was just like, it just like opened up this huge new like thought process to me that, and I know it's weird, but I had like this spiritual experience, and if you ever seen a toilet flush, and you flush it, like all this junk goes down, and then it comes with like clean, healthy water, not healthy, don't drink it. Water, and you're like, that's great, right? It's a toilet. Like, all stuff goes away. Well, that's what I felt like in my body. Like, my body was full of crap and horrible things. And it felt like from my head to my toe, like, everything just flushed out and was, like, replaced with, like, well, it wasn't even replaced. I was just totally empty, and I was like, cool. You know, like, what do I do now? And I didn't care that my mom was going to kick me out. I knew that everything was going to be okay. And those thoughts did not originate from me whatsoever. And I feel like the Lord told me, go to AA and get a sponsor, the Lord that I didn't believe in, you know? And I'm like, okay. So I went back to AA, and I remember I went over to Todd's house because that's, like, pretty much where we all hung out. And everybody was watching a hockey game, and I was like, gosh, I really want to stay here and watch the hockey game because whatever guy I liked at the time was there. And he's like, nope, we're going to the meeting. Everybody else was staying. I was like, why does everybody else get to stay, and we have to go to the damn meeting? He probably was just like, please, let's get you to a meeting. Like, you're crazy. You're ruining our group with your chaos. And so we went, and I saw this girl, and I just immediately was attracted to her, and I asked her to be my sponsor, you know, because her and her boyfriend had drank and used together, and now they were sober together. And I was like, me and my boyfriend have the same problem, you know, like, we can't stop drinking and using. Maybe if we stop together, then we could still be married. So, like, that was, like, my big, you're going to be my sponsor. And she took me through the steps, and I had this major just willingness out of nowhere. I was just like, you know what, I don't know. And that was the best point to be at, was I don't know. I don't know how to not drink. I don't know what the steps are. You know, even though I had been out of AA for like 2 years, I really had no idea about doing these or how to stay sober one day at a time or any of that. I definitely believed I was an alcoholic at that point. She took me through the steps, through the book, just like her sponsor. And, you know, we'd highlight stuff. And just looking back, like, my mom would literally drive me like an hour out to Lutz, drop me off at Karen's house for like 2 hours, and then come back and get me and bring me all the way back home, you know, 5 minutes. And it was awesome. Like, looking back, like, if I had more time, I would probably get really emotional about that, but I'd push that to the side and keep moving forward. And so, you know, I ended up just by doing these things blindly, doing what my sponsor said. She'd be like, do the dishes for your mom without asking. I'm like, that's not going to help anything, but whatever, you know, so I did it. And like little by little, I'm like acting the right ways, you know, acting as if and changing my actions to change my thinking. You know, those were big things for me. And trying to help others, even though I had no idea what I was saying, you know, I would just be like, I knew like if you wanted to help somebody, you like get up in their face and talk AA and talk about a meeting and a sponsor. So I would do that, you know, and I met a lot of cool people that way. I didn't get a lot of sponsees that way, but finally did get one, and it was awesome. I still sponsor her today, actually. And she was supposed to be here tonight, and she's not. That's cool, right? Okay, she's, you know, it's okay. She's got her own life. You know, she lives on Palo Beach, whatever. And it's okay. And my sponsor said she might be here tonight, too. Gosh, I hope she doesn't hear this. But she's not here either, so it's okay. You guys are all here, and that's what's important. So I started having like this the spiritual experience of like the educational variety, you know, where you're like doing and stuff's happening, and all of a sudden I'm working at Burger King and I go to my job every day and I don't die. I wake up early and I don't die, you know, and I had to stop asking people in AA for money, you know, because it just wasn't the right thing to do, you know, and I would make my own money from Burger King and I would walk to work in the dark because I have to get there at like 5 a.m. But I was just so happy. I was like, do you guys know I don't have to drink anymore? Like, did you know that I could be happy and not drinking at the same time? Like, that was such a lie. Like, that did not exist, you know, until I finally felt like that was happening. And little by little, it came to that. And the friends that I've made have been so amazing. Like, when I got pregnant and had my daughter, there was, I think it was like a record for the hospital. There's like 17 people in our hospital room, maybe even more. In a small hospital room with me, my baby, David, my husband, and it was just amazing. Like, looking back, I can't even believe that all those people came, like, just to see that, you know, and see our baby. And they waited, like, all day. I felt really bad. I was like, get this baby out. All my friends are here. You know, they want to see it. And that was amazing. And then I got married, and we went to Las Vegas, and a bunch of our friends came, and it was, like, amazing. And I'm, like, living this dream. But, you know, that's great. But, you know, I'm having a really hard time dealing, like, day-to-day, like, relationships with people at work, relationships with people at home, drawing boundaries. I'm having some codependency issues, and all of a sudden it's like I've been doing in AA to not drink for so many years, and now I'm, like, okay, now I got to just be, you know. I can still go to AA, but I can't go all the time. I can, to literally talk to my sponsor on the phone, I have to go to her house because there's no way with my daughter. She will bang on the sliding glass door and everything. Like, she's crazy. So I've really just been making the time. You know, I go over there every Wednesday, and we've been, you know, working together, and I feel like we're about to uncover a whole new box of ugly. And I'm like, oh, Lord, you guys know what it's like when Lord shows you, like, hey, this is you. I know you haven't seen it in a while, and you're like, oh, please, no, that's not how I am. But I know I'm about to learn a bunch of that because I just have butterflies all the time, and I'm like, oh, it's coming. But some big changes and, like, big growth is coming, you know. So I'm excited about that. But I know I have to wrap up soon. This has just been really fun being up here. So I can't believe I've been sober this long. I'm definitely the least deserving. If anything, I have been spared, you know. I don't know why me and not, you know, my friend Nicole, you know, who's still out there or whatever. And she stuck her hand out way more than me, you know. And at some point, I don't know, I think it was kind of a resentment, you know, started brewing, and it just got worse and worse. And we never saw her again, you know. And we occasionally see her here and there, and it just breaks my heart, you know, because she should be here with me, you know, like she was my like hope, you know, like I wanted to be like her, you know, I wanted to not drink and be happy about it and still dress cute and not be a square. You know, I had a sponsor call me a square, and I was like, what? I used to pick her up from Goodwill. I was like, she's like, you know, not drinking's like kind of square. And like I'm worried about what she thinks, but it's really stuck with me ever since. I'm like, I'm like a square. But, you know, maybe I am a square. You know, I go to bed at like 9 o'clock at night, you know, and I go to work every day. I wake up early. I don't die, which I'm still amazed that I go to work every day. I have an actual job, like a real job, and I'm 30. It's like I'm a real person, you know. But then I quickly have to remind myself that that's not true. I'm still like this total crazy person just getting to live this other life, and it's amazing. So congratulations, Amanda, and thank you all for listening.